Here we are. Hello, hello, good morning. Qualified Tutor loves to bring people together to ask questions and to push our thinking forward in tutoring together. This is how we raise standards in tutoring. Thursdays at 11 a.m. are QT conversations. And actually, we've had the most amazing week of events because Tuesday was our business club, and Odette led a really fantastic session. You agree, Georgina? And it was high trust and it was informative. And the people in the room were really, really highly engaged and totally honest about what's working well and what they're struggling with. Big companies, small companies, and everything in between. We really, really enjoyed that. The next one is, I think, next month. And then yesterday we had supervision circles. So we reopened our second season of supervision circles, which are an opportunity for tutors to debrief. To reflect on what's working well in tutoring, to ask the questions about how to improve, and really to sort of factor in how closely we work with our students and how important it is to have a supportive context to sort of let go of some of that energy and reflect in safe spaces. We, of course, are all about building safe spaces. But today, QT Conversations, our theme is measuring impact in tutoring. This is a conversation that was inspired by something that we were discussing in one of these meetings a month or so ago. And we were talking about, well, let's just dive straight in and you'll see what we were talking about. So I'd like to start you off with a prompt. John Hattie, who has created the biggest meta study of education research ever. His study is called Visible Learning because what he's doing is he's making learning visible by measuring what has impact. And his one of his key phrases is know thy impact. He says, when an educator knows their impact, then they can do more of that and less of the other things. But it's not so easy because it's not just, a student is not like a car. You can't lift the hood and look at the engine, right? It's not like a plant. You can't see the growth. So my question to you is, this will go in lots of directions, and I'm not looking for right answers. And what I'm aiming to do is for us to come to some practical ideas together. How do you know your impact as a tutor? Let's go. Who's going to unmute?
Yeah, I don't mind. Oh, Georgina, do you want to go first?
No, carry on, yeah.
I think the simplest way to measure the impact is actually through the student's progress because it's very visible in your class. Let's say after a few weeks, whether the student's becoming more confident or whether the student is becoming more engaged in the class. And sometimes I also hear the comments, feedback from the parents saying that, oh, my daughter is reading more often independently by herself after taking your class. So I think these are very direct, visible impact that I can directly measure.
Fantastic. So hold on a
But
second. So you're talking about learning attitudes and learning behaviors here.
yes,
Okay, tell us more.
or progress, the student's progress.
Progress measured against what? Progress in what?
So the progress in the subject students learning. For example, I'm
Okay.
teaching English literature and also reading. So one of the way I can measure my student progress in reading is, okay, whether they're reading more actually independently and also in the class, whether they can really improve their thoughts, their thinking about what they're reading. So I think
Okay,
these are very
fantastic.
direct ways for me to measure the student's progress.
So we're
And
talking about reading for pleasure and we're talking about comprehension and inference. I am going to push you guys in this conversation. You
I
be
think
warned,
for both,
okay?
yeah.
So I'm wondering whether you would test fluency and I'm wondering whether you would test mistakes. Tell me about that.
Well, for fluency, I actually don't ask my students to read aloud in class. It's mostly about discussion, what they have read. So for example, okay, what do you think about this chapter, some of the ideas of the author, what you agree, what you disagree? So instead of reading a paragraph aloud altogether.
Why?
I think mainly because most of my students, they already have a very good reading foundation in terms of fluency. They can
Okay.
read fluently, but in terms of comprehension, maybe not that good. So right. That's why we focus most of the time on comprehension and also actually criticism as well, not just to understand, but also to express the student's opinion about the text itself.
Okay. So do I have your permission to keep asking and pushing you?
So yeah, for sure.
Thank you. So tell me this. How do you notice? How do you track? Is this anecdotal? Is there data that you are maintaining to be able to say how much a student is reading for pleasure, what the level of their inference and comprehension is shown to be in sessions?
I think it's actually very difficult to track in a quantitative way. It's more like qualitative. I see that my students are actually speaking more about what they're reading. Previously, maybe just one sentence, that's done. And then now they can maybe express a full set paragraph about what they're thinking about.
So that absolutely is quantitative.
I'm thinking quantitative in a way that I can put into numbers.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, but here it's more like the content, what a student is saying.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think that's one example to measure the student's progress in terms of reading comprehension and also analysis.
Awesome. Thanks, Jan. Georgina?
Yeah, that was really interesting. You've just very eloquently said, Jan, what I was thinking. I don't know how to say it, but I teach students for GCSEs and A-levels, and I'm very conscious that I don't want to give them more tests, and that actually a lot of the time their challenge is less with the content than with exactly what you said, learning the particular behaviours that are going to make the biggest difference in the full learning journey and building their confidence and tackling any anxieties that they might have. So I don't want to give them lots of extra tests, and I'm conscious that I can get a pretty clear view of how they're doing just from the conversations that we have. But how am I demonstrating that, and how am I actually proving, probably to myself but to anybody else, that like I'm actually making an impact here? And it has to be that I'm not just observing it in the lesson, I'm actually taking 5 minutes at the end to write down, I saw these behaviors, I saw this confidence, they did this that they didn't do before. And probably it would be very helpful if I did that and then shared it with the student rather than keeping it all in it.
Okay, so there's a few different things there. Certainly that last point about feeding back what you're noticing to the students. Also, how important it is that you're tailoring your learning objectives, which are handling the anxiety of exam preparation and having a love for learning that goes way beyond the exam, right? Because that's what I know about you. So you're looking for behaviours, aren't you? Claire, can I call on you next? Because you're primary. So now we've done English, science, maths, and would you mind?
No, go ahead. So I probably would agree that I'm not hugely fond of use testing unless it's with a specific end goal. Say, for instance, if it's up, you know, not long before the SATs and they want to, you know, they're specifically working towards that as their end goal. I think it's hugely to do with their behaviours, but that's also age dependent because, you know, a year one child will have hugely different behaviours to a child in year six. So I think the way of measuring success is the progress. You do see, I mean, I've seen the progress over time from what they're producing, and I tend to give them the feedback as they're working, but also at the end, particularly the face-to-face sessions, at the end of the face-to-face sessions I talk to their parents about what we've done, particularly because I know, you know, they're quite keen to know, and also for them to be able to work it in with what's going on in the classroom, and that's, you know, predominantly. But I mean, as I say, unless it's really working towards SATs or towards a specific assessment, I don't always think that assessments will prove what I want, because I think they, in the classroom and in the school system, they get so much of that anyway.
So that's really interesting, because my background, as I mentioned to you, is also primary, and I used to really struggle with finding measurables. And I felt that I needed measurables because I needed to be able to be sure that I was doing the right work for the children. And every time I took money from a parent, I just really wanted to feel like I was proving my worth. It made me feel a little bit insecure, that sort of the fact that there wasn't an endpoint exam to measure against. And I used to do things like, you know, seeing how much of a bond 10-minute test they could get complete within the 10 minutes and see the progress that way, or certainly confidence and certainly bouncing into a session and bouncing out of a session. But what you really want to be able to do is measure how much progress the student is making within your sessions and then optimize that. Emma, what are your thoughts?
You know from previous conversations, Julia, that I'm not one for just being about results driven. I think the way I see my feedback at the minute is from the parents and the whole family of they've come to me stressed, the household is stressed, and 2 weeks in they're like, oh, they're so much more relaxed, they're happy. I had one this week that their mum actually emailed me and said that this student came out of her session smiling for the first time in years. This child is refusing to go to school at the minute, but is walking out of my sessions and her English sessions smiling. To me, that's progress. And those anecdotes, I'm not very good, the same as Georgina, as of recording them. I need to actually be more conscious of, oh, someone said that, I'm actually going to write it down, or the student said that, I'm going to write it down. And I went through a phase of writing down stuff students had said. The other thing I did was in my group sessions, I actually asked the students, I actually said to them, if you were talking to your friend about these sessions, what would you say? And that was a really interesting exercise because it was, it's not what we would normally get as feedback. It's not a parent testimonial. It's not a progress in terms of tests. But some of the feedback they gave was really interesting.
Fantastic. Dee, I know that you've got plenty of those stories as well, don't you?
Yeah. It was, I think it was one of Arthur's tutor tips, one of his guests. I can't remember which one it was, about things to do in tutoring sessions. There's something which I do much more intentionally now at the end of the session is make room to reflect on what the student has done and ask them to say specifically, is there one or two things that you found particularly helpful about today's session? So getting it to frame them in their own words. And I don't let them be general about it. I want them to be specific as they can. And I might well push them and ask them, so how might you do things differently as a result of what we've done? I think it was again from the same tutoring tip. And I'll say, okay, so you're going to leave this session and it's quite possible that someone, possibly mum or dad or someone, is going to ask you, so what did you learn today? So what would be your answer to that question? What did you learn today? And I'm now making them do that reflection, which is something that in a class of 30 is almost certainly not going on. And if I can encourage that kind of behaviour and make it habitual, then it must surely have an impact on their learning, because they're going to do it all of the time. Okay, what did I learn today? What am I going? Is it going to have an impact? And if so, what am I going to do differently as a result? I don't like a number of comments we've had already. Testing is necessary. And I know there are people who advocate doing some kind of assessment with the student when you first start with them to get an idea of where they are. And you have to do some kind of assessment. You have to ask questions. You have to give them stuff to do to try and determine where they are. But I also deeply believe that some of the difficulties that we have in our education system now is because we have become so focused on knowing what the outcomes of the learning is. How are we quantifying what's going on? How can we measure that? And then we've got league tables and all the other kind of stuff. And we're now going to head off in all sorts of other directions if we head off down those exactly ways. So yes, we need to be able to quantify. We need to see the impact, but and it needs to be measurable in some way. But a lot of it is going is not it's not possible to quantify. It's not possible to say this child has got from here to here. And as Jan said at the beginning, it is about noting changes in their attitudes, noting changes in their behaviors. And I think, as Georgina said, she's making a note of those, and perhaps it is something that we should be actively feeding back to the students. And I when I give feedback, I don't just they do something, I don't say that's good, I tell them why it's good. That's why that's gone well. And conversely, if something doesn't go as it should, I'll say, are you sure about that? Make them check. And that can have a learning outcome as well. And
Absolutely.
with my more able students, those who are aiming for top grades, it's very much a case of they can do the stuff, and I'm now just teaching them, modelling to them how to maximise their end result by filtering out those unforced errors, those
Right.
transcription errors, and all the rest of it.
So what I'm hearing is that there's a strong focus on assessment looping into feedback. So whatever you're noticing, you're feeding back to the student straight away so that they can make those changes and improvements, and that you are speaking to them about their own metacognition. You're talking to them about what they're doing well, about what's working for them, about what they learned in this session. And those are disciplines that will spill over into the rest of their learning behaviors, and that's immense. But that's really what we do and why we do it, right? What I want to point out is we are in this room are nervous because there's a tension between what we want to provide for young people. We want to provide that positivity, that confidence building, right? We want that qualitative, the whole family's happier now vibe. And yet there are hard edges, which is to say, Georgina manages a team of tutors and she needs to know that they're all doing good work. How is she to do that when it's simply, are they cheerful? Because they could be cheerful talking about Simpsons for an hour. Yeah. So how is Georgina going to scale excellence when it's just you and you can trust yourself and you know that you've got the feel for it? Okay. But how are we going to create an honest profession that knows its own impact?
I mean, I can tell you how I've done that. Well, how I've tried to do that anyway, because it's—I realise it starts from how you actually recruit people into your team. I can't just advertise the role of a tutor and assume that everybody sees that the same way as I do, because I learned that they actually don't. I have to make it really clear from the beginning what I'm trying to
Sorry,
do.
there's a whole story there underneath. I learned that they actually don't. Right?
They don't necessarily see things the same way that I see
Got
things.
it.
So we have to make sure that that message is really clear from the start, and then even past onboarding a new tutor, training them in like, okay, that they're passionate, but how do they learn how to deliver that passion, and explaining the these are the specific goals for the student, and if you have an anxious student, this is how we address that, and basically taking the fear away from the tutor by giving them some tools to pull from, but at the same time giving them the flexibility. And exactly as you say, I've told them our goals. They also have to have some how and some set expectations, otherwise it's just a load of this is what I want you to do, go figure it out, have fun. So it's more, I think I was just thinking as everyone was talking, there needs to be some sort of probably like a feedback template. Look for these things in your lessons and document where you see them and how they're demonstrated. And then for me, over time, it's just got easier to spot, but in actually documenting them, like everything else, you can see what went well. You'll forget about it by next week if you haven't written it down.
Yeah, especially when the tutor's writing those reports or, documenting for themselves, then they get to do the work rather than you looking over their shoulder, because there's very much this case of, and Emma, I know that that's part of what you're responding to, that we don't want accountability to be top down and stressful and judgmental, and we don't want people to, we don't want anybody coming in and saying, you are or are not good enough. But we do, as professionals, have to have the integrity to ask ourselves that questions ourselves. So last week, no, a few weeks ago, somebody on our WhatsApp group posted that she felt that she hadn't done a session well, right? That's the other side of know your impact. I didn't do something well. What am I going to do about it? So what does it didn't go well look like? Does it look like grumpy families?
Looks like students not coming back.
Ah, nice.
Looks like students that aren't confident, that aren't participating actively in sessions. It looks like family, like parents that questioning, not questioning, maybe that's the wrong word, but parents that aren't satisfied with what you're doing.
Really, really nice. So in a classroom, the child has to keep coming back, right? But in tutoring, they don't. And if you're not delivering whatever that looks and feels like for your clients, they won't come back. And that absolutely is the biggest indicator that your impact was not what you were hoping it was going to be. It also makes you unsustainable as a business owner. But what occurs to me is, do they know? Do the parents know what they're supposed to be looking for? So, for example, you say if a student doesn't participate willingly in activities, it means that they feel threatened, right? They feel that it's not safe to have a go. And that's on you, because your one of your measures is to create safe spaces where your student is willing to put themselves out there and have a go. But does a parent know? Does a parent know what good learning behaviors look like? So Jan said, parents tell me the child is reading for pleasure. Tell me about the parents' relationship to you measuring your impact.
That's a really good question, Julia. So one of the reasons why the parents come to me is actually they think learning English is not just about grammar, vocabulary, but also to cultivate that love for reading, for literature. So that's why at first the child doesn't like reading. It's always like the parents who forces the her child to read, or it's like a school homework. But after taking the classes, the parents sometimes just message me saying that now my daughter is reading by herself independently for pleasure. So I feel like, yeah, that's definitely a huge impact that I have made on my student. But in terms of
Imminent.
the relationship, how I m build the relationship with the parent, is that the question, Julia?
Go ahead.
So I think I always maintain very close like a relationship with all of the parents, messaging them from time to time about their children's behavior, their improvement, their progress. And also they just sometimes come to me about their anxieties, their concerns. Then I will tell them some of my suggestions, what you can do as a parent at home. So for example, for reading, actually the children, they would kind of regard their parents as a role model as well. So if the parents never read at home, the chances that the child doesn't read as well. But if the parent reads together with the child will be more motivated to read as well. So that's, for example, one of the suggestions I give to my one of my parents. You can read
Fantastic.
with your child together.
Fantastic. Absolutely right. And I think that the impact of parents on educational outcomes is well documented. It's far beyond what a school can create. There's so much that happens in the home and in the foundations of what that child is seeing and drinking up, that role modeling that you mentioned, what the values are, what the experience is of how learning feels like. Claire, you mentioned as a primary tutor that parents always want to stop and hover at the door, right? And hear about how their child's done.
Well, you get a kind of mix. So you get, I mean, I work, I mean, I kind of, there was definitely that, like with some parents, and they would be very much sort of there and sort of like, oh, you know, should we stay and whatever. And occasionally it was like it felt okay. But I noticed one thing was definite was the children's behaviour changes if they've got sort of mum or dad peering in. And even like, yeah, if like staying, like, you know, coming to the end of the session and sort of appearing to hear feedback, they the children still behave, you know, they still change, although they're used to it, because I'm kind of like, I've always preempted that this is going to happen, you know, this is what they've done, this, the, you know, I will show them using, you know, the work and saying this is where we need to work on, and sort of also talk to them about, you know, what's going on with their schoolwork, you know, also to try and interlink it. But I think sometimes that's when they need their reassurance. But I'd agree, definitely, if the children, like you say, if it's a classroom, they have to be there. If it's tuition, they don't have to do it. You know, it's a voluntary thing. But I have found, like, when I initially take the students on, is that I always, always ask the students straight out, do you want to do this yourself?
Oh, yes.
You know, because so many times parents come with, you know, their sort of idealism, and they're like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And I'll just turn to them. I'll say, are you happy to do this? I mean, I don't mind if it's primary level, because, you know, I'm also so mindful, you know, which I had in the past, you know, students, because of times, you know, they were like, oh, well, yes, we can fit it in. And then they won't need to be doing whatever. They can miss the rugby or whatever training. And I'll be like, no, I always say to them, this is a priority. They must do their extracurricular activities, because I explain to them, I just say, well, you know, otherwise they can get a bit, you know, resentful of the fact that they have to see the tutor instead of maybe going to rugby practice or to whatever their extracurricular is. So it's trying to get the parents to see that balance, you know, yes, it's important if they want them to have their academic study, but they must also have their switching off time.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And what occurs to me is, you know, usually when we talk about this, I would refer to that as relationship building. But I think in this case, it's also sort of a baseline assessment. When you ask the student, do you want to be here? You're finding out a lot, aren't you, in terms
Absolutely.
Of commitment and attitudes and behaviours, whether or not they feel confident saying no. All of those elements will be giving you some information. I think it's worth pointing out that we happen to have a very self-selecting group of soft and lovely free-range tutors in this room. And there are other types of tutors who will do a baseline assessment and assess at the end of every session and be very, very numbers focused. And I think it's interesting to think about the fact that we're here. We sound like chickens. I was really thinking that. I was thinking that even a free-range farmer knows how many eggs their chickens lay, and or that their chickens are more delicious, their eggs are more delicious than battery farm chicken eggs. So there is quantity and quality that we must draw out if we are running businesses. It's not a hobby, right? It's not tapestry or flower arranging. It's not free, you know, loose creative art. Tutoring is a profession, and therefore it must have measures. And those measures can be, do they come back for the next session? The measures could be, are they reading willingly? Are they excited about their learning? Are they, as Dee said, able to reflect on what's worked well and what they want to do better next time? Are we improving their confidence in a broader context for learning and making decisions? Georgina has a strong focus on careers. So is it about building up the whole person in that way? But Georgina, you also know that they get better in science. And Emma, you also know that they get better in maths. You're not a children's coach, you're a maths tutor.
Are we not both?
Yeah, go on. Bring it, come on.
Like most of my students, in fact I would say probably 95% of my students come to me because they haven't been able to succeed in a classroom environment. Like if they could succeed there, they wouldn't need us. So we have to be something different. We're not just a teacher. And a lot of those students, the reason they haven't coped is because they need that bit of coaching. They need that extra level of support that isn't purely academic, because that's what they get in school most of the time. And I get why you've got a class full of 34 students. When I was a teacher in school, I did the same. We were focused on the academics because you don't have the capacity for anything else. But with a tutor, you have space for that. You have space to nurture them and build their confidence and build their resilience and tell them that it's okay, that things go wrong, and you have the time to do that. So I think we are more than just teaching. We are mentoring, we are coaching, we are building the whole student, not just an academic.
And as Jan said, the family as well, because when you give that advice to the parent about reading with the child at nighttime, that's transformational. Right. So do we need to worry about measuring impact then? Or are we saying we all have an instinct for it and it's fine? Because I'm really worried that parents don't know what's what. And I'm really worried that parents may well take on the wrong tutor who is not delivering impact, and the parent won't know until the child has failed their GCSEs or, you know, dropped behind further or had another disheartening experience. Yeah, so some of you know that one of my children is having a lot of tutoring at the moment because he needs to get through his GCSEs and he needs all the help he can get. And I know that what I'm looking at is good tutoring. But if I didn't know, I wouldn't know. So how do you articulate? So there are testimonials, absolutely. And then there's also, you know, these big businesses, these massive, great big tutoring marketplaces. We spoke in at BET with my lovely friend Selena Samuels, who runs Cluey, which is the biggest tutoring business in Australia. How does she make sure that every single one of those tutors delivers excellence? Because that's what every single student deserves. Or do we say tutoring can't scale? You need an Emma, you need a D, you need a Claire, and it has to stay small and independent led. Jan, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's answering your question, but my comment in the chat is that for parents, I feel like the way they measure a tutor's impact is more result driven, because that's the main reason why they would seek help from a tutor. I want my child to improve English. I want my child to improve math. So if they don't see the grade in school improves, then they don't feel like the tutor has an impact on their child.
So that's really, really important, because even if your big goal is to build the child up as a whole person,
yeah, exactly,
the parent won't continue to pay if they're not getting the results that are their objectives, right? So in order to have the opportunity to do the work that you really believe is transformational, there's also some transactional work that has to happen.
And this is where educating the parents comes in. This is where showing them what impact should look like, can look like. And it's not just about, are they getting better grades at school? I mean, yes, it's that's clearly measurable. But the most rewarding, most lovely feedback, the stuff that I cherish the most, is when parents comment on non-academic changes in their children, which are having a positive impact.
I agree with you, but I do think it's important to remember that those beyond academic changes are sitting on top of academic changes. Mm. Yeah. And if you weren't a good maths tutor, you wouldn't be building them up as whole people. That is sitting underneath there, and we must lift the lid on that, because otherwise it won't become consistent. Georgina, go ahead.
Yeah, as usual, I have a bit of a scientific approach to it, that if you're not measuring things, then how do you, it just takes longer to make sure that you're going in the right direction by just doing things on gut feel, because we're people. So we're going to have good days and bad days, and we're going to make lots of mistakes. But as soon as you start actually measuring, like consciously measuring things and documenting things, it goes a lot better, and you make progress. You do the right thing more consistently. And then I can teach up the rest of the tutor team what's gone well, and they can come back to me and say, well, this student did this really well, so we're going to do lots more of that. So then I immediately feel like, oh, brilliant, this tutor gets it. I've got something to give me some reassurance. So yeah, unless we're actually documenting our thought processes, we're going to just kind of be going in the dark to see what feels right.
I think that's exactly true. And I think that's importantly honest. And I think it's significant that it's taken us 39 minutes to get here, because we can reassure ourselves that everyone's happy. But if we're not measuring it, we won't know until it's too late when they're not happy. And it's our responsibility. It's not the parents' responsibility, and it's not the child's responsibility. I do love what Dee said, though, that you can educate the parents in the same way that she's pointing to the students and saying, show me what you learned today. You can also give parents the language for what the real benefits of your tutoring are. I get that. I totally get that. But Georgina, you said in the chat, I can't bear to wait for the next mock. Right. So my GCSE facing child at the moment is doing past papers all day long. And yeah, and that's hard, but it is the right thing for him to be doing in April. We are in April, right? So that's actually a really fast feedback loop that he's on. And Claire, who's supporting him in science, is seeing that he either is or isn't making progress. Helen in maths is saying, yeah, look, you know, he's at least less hating it, right? Less hating it is our stage there. So do you, Emma, you know, I'm curious with your students who I think sometimes are taking functional skills or not even, are you doing any sorts of baseline activities with them? Are you doing any sorts of iterative, you know, checking for understandings? Of course you are.
We're doing it all the time.
I know. Tell me.
It's continual old-fashioned AFL, I guess, rather than
assessment for learning. That's exactly
rather than summative assessments, which are not, they're helpful, and they are helpful for the GCSE students. So we've got students doing GCSEs, functional skills, then we go all the way down through Key Stage 3 where there's nothing really. So we're continually doing skills checks, but the skills checks aren't a check really. It's just a name we give them to get them reinforcing those skills.
Yeah.
So we are checking they can still do it, but we're also, if they can't do it, it's just a recap. It's,
you go straight in and sure help them. Reinforcing, you don't leave them to struggle. Yeah.
We don't have to wait for the GCSE.
It occurs to me it's almost like an early years profile that you create where you're looking at the whole learner. Does that resonate with you? Where we're saying, you know, these are the skills, these are the areas of focus, knowledge and understanding of the world, but also behaviors.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it's more, I think of my experience with early years as a member of a committee within early years. You're looking at the whole spectrum. Yeah, it's more, but we can do that. We've got the capacity to do that, like I said earlier. So yeah, you can look at different parts of each student rather than just the academic.
And you can build for your tutors, because I know that you also are deploying tutors, Emma, you can build out a report form that asks them to quantify or qualify specific areas. Does that sound right? Okay, so my final question to you is this, 11:42. My final question to you is this. Are you happy with what you are currently doing in terms of measuring your own impact? What is that measurement telling you? And what are the improvements that you'll be making based on those measurements? Claire, I feel like you've got something here.
I think, yes, I am. But I will always say, probably like everybody else, you always look to reach a higher achievement for your own professional and personal development. You know, yes, I mean, I'd say in the extent that I have no space, no more capacity, but I will always think, you know, when I'm taking on new students, or even when I've, you know, completed with students, what is it that I could improve on? You know, I like to stay also ensure that I'm staying current with what's going on, you know, sort of making sure that you're up to date as well. So there's always a way to measure it. And yes, I mean, like the other people have said, you know, you can keep a measurement, particularly if you're running a business. But to an extent, mine has always been that I've managed to stay fairly full with students. And, you know, once, even when I've had students leave, there's always somebody who comes and hops in ready for the next space. So
yeah,
I think in that extent, but I do think just because it's, particularly as teachers, it's always going to be a profession where you reflect.
That's right.
Even when you're not in the classroom, you reflect.
That's right. That's right. That reflective practice is a key indicator, isn't it? But
absolutely.
For me, you know, popularity as a proxy for effectiveness is a little bit concerning, because maybe word on the playground is good about you. That's not for no reason. That's important. And it's the most powerful testimonial you could have. You know, word of mouth references are what we all want to be filling up our schedule on. But I do worry that popularity and a good teacher, a good tutor, are not the same thing. And booking up yours, I would suggest that not losing students is a really, really powerful one. But, you know, you can easily conjure up a waiting list just to make it look like you're popular, and use that to jumpstart this sort of performance of excellence. So I think that your reflective practice point is important. And I think also that point about staying current is important. What else have you guys got?
I have made many notes to add to my training, because at the moment, if when I do have a new client, I personally go through goal setting with them and then pass the information over to the tutor. And then having this conversation, I realised that that's ridiculous. There's literally no point in me getting to know that student that I'm never working with. So the tutors need that added
well,
to their training.
Well, sort of, because you're sort of the head teacher, right?
Yeah.
And in order to know that you're giving the child the right tutor, in order to know that you, that the tutor, it, in order for you to support the tutor to know what they're working with, there is an advantage for you knowing that student. But it could be that it's a little bit, it would be more high trust for you to hand that responsibility over to the tutor and then possibly feed back to you.
And it's not very nice, because I have that conversation and I'm like, oh, I love this child. I want to work with them.
You are such a sap. I want them all. I need more hours. So,
not the ideas.
So, but then when you know that child and you give them to one of your tutors, do you then have a sense, how are you watching the student's progress?
So it's usually very, it's kind of ad hoc. There's no process, which is what I'd like to add. It's more that I would kind of check in with that tutor and say, just generally, how are your students doing? And whatever they come back with, I'll say, oh, well, this is the impression I got from that goal setting session that we did. Have you tried X, Y, Z? But by this point, we don't know. Like, it could be some time that they've been working together. So it would be much more effective if there was guidance that they could pull from through that process, and actual documented updates for each lesson that I can see before things. Because most of the time, the feedback that I get from a customer that's working with another tutor team is, can we stop our lessons? And at that point, I'm like,
wow,
oh,
too okay. late. Yeah. I've been doing some work with an alternative provision service recently, and their tutors have to submit a daily report onto their portal, or they don't get paid. And it does make sense that there is a record that needs to be kept and tracked, especially as tutoring scales. Emma, is that the kind of thing that you're thinking about as well in terms of building a feedback form?
So I, at the minute, it's all very manual and therefore I don't do it all the time, but I tend to have a check-in with the client after two sessions to check they're happy with the tutor, to check everything's settled fine. After one, there's no point, they haven't got to know them yet. So I always try and do it after two. I feel like I need some sort of form and getting more regular feedback, probably from the tutor and the client. I'm really conscious though that whenever I ask for feedback from clients, I don't get it. So I could send the form out till I'm blue in the face, but unless they actually fill it in, it's no good to me. And I don't know how to do that.
Well, you do. You do know how to do it. It's things like making it part of the expectation. If it's necessary, and if you can prove to the parent that it's worth 2 minutes of their life, then you'd build it into your processes. Before you show up at the next session, fill in this form. I'm going to text it to you. What time of day do you like me to text? Would you like me to WhatsApp it to you?
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do here is to show that it's only when we move from the ad hoc to the systematic that we know that we're doing what we set out to do. And I really, really want, I have this like personal feeling that as a tutor who's working for a bigger organization, you need the support. And the tutoring leaders amongst us can't provide that support if they don't know how the tutor's doing. So Georgina, your tutors may well be floundering. And if you're not tracking them, like you say, you won't know it until they lose the client. I'm really sorry. I know that this is tough, but I feel that it's important. Dee, what are your thoughts?
It was just coming back to that idea of how we record what's going on in a session. The majority of my students are through a tutoring business, and they use Tutor Cruncher as their, is it CRM? I don't know, I use that. And I have to hit the click here to complete lesson, and then that notifies the business that the lesson's happened. And then I can actually then complete a lesson report, which I do. And I know for a fact that of the tutors that work with them, I probably write the most detailed reports. And I do give a breakdown of what we've done, and I make comments on both attitudes and behaviours if appropriate, as well as what we've done and the academic progress that I'm seeing. So the parent will see that. If they may not do anything with it, but those that I've been working with for some time, I do get responses from the parents thanking me for that. And those that I have WhatsApp groups with the student and with the parent, there's one particular student, the email goes to the parent and the parent immediately drops it into the WhatsApp group for the student to see, to remind them about what we've done.
Yes.
And if there is any follow-up work. So
then it's not bureaucracy. It's absolutely part of the learning loop.
Absolutely. The parent knows what we've covered. And if there is any additional work that the student needs to do before the next session.
Yeah.
And can then, I mean, I want the student to be able to do it without having to be prompted, especially when we're in year 10, year 11. They should be, you know, building that into themselves. But if the parent feels they need to prompt the student, then
I think what's lovely about this conversation, and Jan, I'm coming to you in just a second, you're going to open and close this conversation for us. I think what's been really interesting about this conversation is that we're looking for meaningful behaviors that are not about bureaucracy and top-down accountability, right? That they're actually about moving things forward for the people involved. And I think it's worth remembering that as well as the child and the parent, there's also the tutor. And making things work for them or for us, is that's what our commitment is. Jan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely feel like after this conversation, I need to be more mindful of recording my impact and the students' progress. As far as I said, right now, it's more like a gut feeling. I feel my students' progress in the class and sometimes from the parents' feedback, but that's more like passive waiting for seeing the students' progress. So yeah, I definitely feel like after this conversation, I need to find a way how I can document, for example, as Georgina and Dee said, the progress for my students. And also like for parents, it will also be a kind of proof for them that yes, your child is doing well with this tutor, and then they will have more trust in you.
I think that's absolutely right, and I'm so pleased that that's where this conversation has taken us, because we started off with such whole hearts, sure that, you know, happy people is all we need, but I think that sitting underneath happy people are all different behaviors that we really need to shore up in ourselves. I think that that's how we will raise standards in tutoring. I think that that's how tutoring will become more trusted by schools, by teachers, by parents, by the wider education landscape. And if we want to be taken seriously in those ways, we need to behave in those ways. So I do think it's a really strong nudge, and hopefully in the right direction. If anybody wants to sort of brainstorm with me about what it could look like in your context, I'd be really, really happy to do that with you. It's something that I feel so passionate about, and simple ways, you know, really low administrative, you know, low hanging fruit and easy administrative tasks is what we need. And always with keeping the people at the center of things. So never using systems to, you've heard that phrase, the tail wagging the dog. I only learned what that felt like recently. So Jan, the phrase is that, you know, instead of the dog wagging its tail, it's that the tail is in charge, this sort of, you know, outcome is in charge of the whole body, and that's not right. So what we don't want to do is create assessments and measures that then define who we are as tutors. It's the other way around. We define who we are as tutors. We define what our goals are for our students, and then we articulate ways to measure and track that. I feel that there's much more we can talk about this, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Emma, you're absolutely right. We need to get Alexia into this conversation as well. I was hoping she'd be here today. So I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation with you and to welcoming you back next week. Thank you so, so much for participating. Qualified Tutor is all about you and what you need. So if there's anything that's missing, please let me know. Odette and I basically don't sleep. Claire, we're so, so welcome to, glad to have you on board as well. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Dee. Thanks, Georgina. Thanks, Jan. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you, everyone.
Claire. Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks, Sarah. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.